with staff, PBO led by Dr. Janchis, members of the media, everybody was on the platform. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know that today we are meeting to get a briefing and an opinion by the Parliamentary Budget Office on the Appropriation Bill 2021 and the Special Appropriation Bill 2021. We started the process yesterday with the National Treasury, which is a continuation of the process which was started by by the Standing Committee on Finance, fiscal framework adopted by National Parliament, and then dealt with we as this committee before we closed for the first quarter. We dealt with the Division of Revenue Bill. Now we are busy with the Appropriation Bill, which deals with the allocation of budget amongst different national departments and boards. So you are all welcome. We do have an agenda in front of us. Darren, can you have the indication of apologies?
Morning, Chairperson. Yes, I received apologies from Ms. Mplangwini, Mr. Kwankwa, and then Ms. Lonyana. And then Mr. Seki Mam indicated that he will be in and out as he has to juggle between three different meetings this morning. But he will join at some stage, but he will have to go out as well.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Peters is not feeling well. She may try to join, but she's definitely not feeling well. So we'll get an indication from her. As she said yesterday that she was meeting a doctor, she was seeing a doctor yesterday. Okay, those were the apologies. Those are chances with your team. I see Dr. Nelia is here, but you introduced your team, and then we'll give you 1 hour maximum to deal with everything. You know how we do it. After that, we'll then engage with your presentation and allow you to respond, and then we'll go to the next agenda item. Dr. Chanchis?
Good morning, Jefferson. Good morning, honorable members. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I just hope I'm clear. I can hear me.
We can hear you, but next time I want to definitely to change that wherever you are. Hear you, but we are struggling, but that's fine, continue.
I actually moved since I'm in the office. I'm surprised that I'm not here, but we'll deal with that, Chairperson. I will address it. Yes, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. I wish all good health and peace. And colleagues as well. Thank you so much for the opportunity, Chairperson, for us to bring the committee on the special on appropriations and special appropriations for 2021. I'm with my colleagues. I'm with Dr. Landi, Dr. Mohammed, Mr. Amra, Mr. Telo, and other colleagues. I think Mapula, Dr. Sikatano also will be joining us. The whole team, yeah. We'll take you through the presentation. I think I am supposed to be loading the presentation. Yes. Sure. So thank you so much. We will be taking you through the presentation where we focus on specific issues. And I think I'll do the opening session and later on come back again. And Dr. Alandin and Dr. Mohammed will take the committee through in detail some of the key issues we highlight for the committees for consideration. But I just want to also alert the committee that later in the discussions I might have to join another meeting, the NCOP budget and fiscal oversight workshop. I'm giving a presentation later in the day, so I might have to be, but I'll let the chairperson know. And but the Falang will continue with the team in that regard. Here is our presentation outline. Okay. It's not moving, I don't know why. Okay, let's see. I don't know why it's not moving. Okay, yes, it's moving now. It's gonna switch off my video. Right, to make the thing is, this is our presentation outline. We focus very on the fiscal policy objectives underpinning the appropriations. We're also looking at some of the issues around the economic construction, and carbon plans. But also we also try to highlight some of the policy objectives that underpin, you know, priorities that are set out in the 2021 budget. But also we highlight some of the developmental indicators in terms of, you know, spending, proposed the capital and what does it mean in the medium term. But I think we also look at the risks. I think yesterday's discussions with the Chancellery, honorable members raised a lot of issues around economic growth and risks, and also we highlight some of those as well. But also looking at some of the governance failures that have been highlighted, which members know about them already, but I'm just saying to update the committee in terms of some of these governance failures, which will obviously affect the appropriation for the medium term and in terms of how the outcomes are realized in that regard. I don't know why it's taking long to move the slide. Come on. Alright. As I tried to emphasize there, we focus on analysis, you know, on priorities underpinning the plan. Look at the construction recovery. But also look at the composition of spending over the medium term. And what are some of the key issues that the committee will take into account before approving the proposals and highlight some of the key risks that I mentioned in that one. I think clearly the 2020 budget proposal proposed significant reduction in goals and expenditure that's last year to try to deal with. I think what we've seen over the past couple of years, the fiscal objectives has always been around stabilize debt and reduce the budget deficits as the main issue. And I think even we've seen from last year, there's been really an acceleration by government to try to reduce the budget deficits and the level of debt. I think what we raised last year, which we've been raising now, it's the potential implications of the trying to realize objective in the economic growth and also the concerns that the vulnerable in society are not necessarily, it's not very clear how the vulnerable are protected in this process. And the point that we set out as well, or the risk that we raise throughout and we raise throughout the presentations around the budget, it's the sense that, you know, it's not clear how the reduction of, the fiscal objectives being pursued will, you know, enhance economic growth. And I was still highlighting that concern. So it's very important to realize these objectives. But broader issue is ensuring economic growth is realized. I listened yesterday that the Dr. Mamp was emphasizing that there's a protection over infrastructure spending seen also as an area where goods could come in. But I think what we've been trying to say over the years, Chair and Honourable Members, that look, there needs to be a clear discussion around the sense how we're going to get close with the proposal that I made out. And I think that's a key message we sent out there. I'll give Dr. Olandi to continue the presentation and I'll come in later in the discussion. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Dr. Olandi.
Thank you, Director, and good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will take the you forward in this presentation. I'll just switch off my video. So members, normally we start our budget presentations with alignment of the medium-term strategic framework with a consolidated budget, but due to the importance of the economic growth and that it is mainly a national function, that are also funded through the appropriations. We start with the implementation of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, which should also guide planning and appropriations in the economic cluster departments. The table shows the priority interventions identified by government, and then we link the main sources of public funds that are appropriated in this appropriation bill for these interventions. The information could also guide the monitoring of the implementation of the outputs and the expenditure linked to the interventions in the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan. So the first priority, infrastructure investment and delivery, we linked it with mainly to conditional grants in transport, education, health, human settlements, water and sanitation, and also transfers to municipalities. The reason why we also mention that it could assist with monitoring and evaluation. We just want to give an example of things that went wrong last year. So in transport in 2019-20, 98 million of the public transport network grant was withheld by National Treasury to the Nelson Mandela Bay for relevant reasons. So this is one thing that we could have been prevented if we monitor the expenditure and the outputs of this grant in Nelson Mandela Bay, for example. In 2021, this grant was also adjusted downwards from 6.4 billion to 4.4 billion. Also, in terms of several reasons, that also includes the lockdown. Another example, is the Rural Roads Asset Management System grant. In 2019-20, only 61.7% of the grant was spent. And we can continue with a lot of examples. We also provided you with an analysis of health and agriculture conditional grants in our conditional grant briefs, and we will continue with this to assist you with the monitoring of the implementation and the frameworks of these grants. In terms of the industrialization through localization, this is a policy that should be mainstreamed in all departments, and it could be monitored through the institution that actually monitor this. Energy security is mainly ESCOM, monitored by the Department of Public Enterprises, shared by the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, that is also involved with the policy matters and the structural reforms in ESCOM. And yesterday we also heard that the National Treasury, in specific the deputy minister, is also responsible with this involved in the structural reforms in ESCOM. So gender equality and economic inclusion of women and youth, this again is something that should be mainstreamed by all departments. Support for the recovery and growth of the tourism, cultural and creative industries. Tourism, sports, arts and culture are mainly involved within this intervention. And in terms of the green economy, it's mainly environment, forestry and fisheries that are involved. Mass public employment interventions, funds were reprioritized to several departments in 2021, mainly for EPWP jobs, and the outcome should inform the allocation of the provisional allocation in the 2021-22 budget. And the Department of Employment and Labour is also involved within this intervention. The strengthening of agriculture and food security. Members agriculture, land reform and rural development. In agriculture, it's mainly the transfer of agricultural conditional grants to provinces that are appropriated for this purpose in the 2021 appropriations bill. In terms of the macroeconomic policy interventions, National Treasury is involved, as well as trade, industry and competition. Next slide. So members, in terms of revisions that government has made to the consolidated government expenditure, it basically shows that there's no additional financial support for the interventions identified for the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, but structural reforms are recommended. So in addition to the structural reforms, which include policy changes, departments have to reprioritize, work more smarter and evaluate current programs, conditional grant frameworks, projects and plans to eliminate duplication, and also identify relevant targeted actions and expenditure. The graph shows that if we just look at the graph, the first one, we see the trend over time in terms of general public service, which also includes the debt service costs, that over time, since 2017-18, there was a slight increase, but from last year, we see a much higher increase of the proportion that we spend on debt service costs. When we look at public order and safety, members, you can see it is directly linked to the cost of employment in the police services, and that has been reduced by 11 billion in 21-22. And over the medium term, the department also plans to reduce the force by 6,000 members per year over the medium term. And yesterday, we also heard from the National Treasury that they are busy with a massive restructuring within the police force. The proportion of expenditure on housing and community amenities are the same as in 2020-21. And this function group includes the transfer of conditional grants and equitable share to the municipalities, and spending on water supplies, and is estimated to increase in the outer years. Members, just also to note the expenditure on social protection, you can see social protection, this includes the social conditional grants, has peaked in 2020. We've spent 20.4% of our consolidated budget on social protection. This year it reduces to 17%, and it's still reducing over the medium term. Next slide. Just also to link to the reductions, adjustments to the main budget non-interest expenditure since the 2020 budget. We don't have to go through all of these items, members, because the National Treasury also addressed most of this yesterday. But what we added to this table is, you can see in red, the COVID-19 vaccine rollout, which is now included in the special appropriations. So in 2021, the appropriation was 5.2 billion, and now we include another 1.25 billion. The same with the extension of the COVID-19 Social Relief of Distress Grant. The initial appropriation was 2.145 billion, and government is extending this now in the special appropriations by 2.8 billion. And then also in this table, members, you will see I mentioned this in one of the previous slides, the provisional allocation of 11 billion this year for job creation. This has not been appropriated as yet, but it is a provisional allocation that will be appropriated during the adjustments budget. Next slide. So members, just to illustrate the impact of the fiscal strategy on the estimated proportions allocated per economic classification, you can see the reduction in the proportions allocated to COE. Last year we've spent 9.8% of the national allocation, and this year it's been reduced to 9.5%. In terms of goods and services, the proportion actually increased from 4.4% to 4.6%, and transfers and subsidies shows a slightly lower percentage, mainly due to the net effect of lower transfers to households in the form of social grants and slight decreases in transfers to local government and an increase in transfers to provincial government on conditional grants. But members, we can also just focus on the transfers to households, which are also included in the total amount that you see, that is 66.5%. Last year we've spent 13.1% of the total national allocation on transfers to households, and that is now decreasing to 11.5%, and this is mainly linked to conditional grants. Next slide. So in terms of the conditional grants, although the chances to households are decreasing, social grants still provide continuous protection to the vulnerable. The COVID-19 pandemic required additional support, specifically in 2020. You can see in the yellow column, you can see the social relief of distress. Government allocated 17, almost 18 billion in 2020 on the social relief of distress grant. This year, the estimated allocation was reduced to 2.5 billion, and now I've also added in the new special appropriation of 2.8 billion. So you can see it almost increased to 6 billion in the current financial year, the social relief of distress. So members, just also to mention, in terms of the expenditure on the social relief of distress grant in 2020, so in between May 2020 and February 2021, 17.356 billion was paid out to clients, and the number of people that got this grant ranged between 4.4 and 6.1 million. During the course of the financial year. So what it's saying is that 6 million people are benefited from this grant last year. Next slide. Members, for this presentation, we also decided to include all departments to get a holistic picture of the composition of the 2021 appropriations. So you will see in certain departments, CO is the main cost driver. For example, in the presidency spent 62% of their budget on compensation. The Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation spent 66.7% and Public Service Commission 75% of their total budget on COE. But also many national departments, as we've also indicated before, transfer funds to other institutions to deliver services on behalf of the national sphere of government. For example, in corporate services, you can, corporate governance, they basically transfer 95.1% of their total budget. But what we also see in this overall picture and analysis of the proportions and the composition of budgets, that if departments transfer a huge amount of money to other institutions, the COE is generally below 10%. As well as the goods and services. So there's a correlation between COE and goods and services. And in most departments, the proportion spent on goods and services are lower than the proportion spent on COE. But when you can just look further down, yesterday there was also a discussion on StatsSA. When you look at StatsSA, you can see their COE spending is 33.1%, but they spend 59.8% on goods and services. So this is an outlier in terms of the general trend, in terms of the proportions that departments spend on COE and goods and services. Also, when we look at basic education, their COE is only 2% and they spend 7.7% on goods and services. The same with health, social development. You can see the correlation in social development. Their COE is 0.2% of the total expenditure, and goods and services correlates. It is also only 0.2%. The next slide. So the same scenario is also found the same scenario as in StatsSA is also found in military veterans. In this case, the department spends a high proportion of their goods and services on contractors. You can see military veterans, the proportion that they spend on CO is 19.4%, and then the goods and services proportion is much higher. And I actually went into the detail of the department and I found that additional or increase in expenditure is basically with regards to spending on contractors. In terms of environment, forestry and fisheries, it's the same scenario. The goods and services is also much higher in relation to the COE. And the main expenditure there is spending on agency support and outsourced services. So members, when we look at the police force, that is a total different scenario. It's actually the reverse of the other trends that we find. In police, their COE expenditure, the proportion is 78%, but their goods and services expenditure is only 16.9%. So this is already indication that further analysis or further investigation needs to be done on how they do their business. But we also heard that the police services are busy restructuring, so it will make a huge difference in terms of the proportion that they spend on compensation. But there might also be underlying expenditure matters or composition of their budgets. It might be that some of the goods and services are included in COE, because in my mind, there should be a lot of expenditure on uniforms, but I couldn't find an item in goods and services that reflects expenditure on uniforms. On this table, again, members, you can see that there's a lot of departments that has got a high percentage of transfers to other institutions. So, members, what we want to illustrate is that by analyzing and comparing the composition of the budget, but still taking into consideration the business of different departments, one can already identify departments with further evaluations could identify efficiency gains. As I've indicated, departments where we found it's totally out of the general trend. Next slide. So members, this table just isolates the departments that transfer to provinces and local government. So this is the departments that don't transfer to other institutions, they just transfer to provinces and local government in the form of conditional grants. These conditional grants are mainly for infrastructure spending, job creation and skills development linked to the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. The transfers by other votes are made to public entities, government components or other institutions that deliver services on behalf of government. And those transfers are not always easy to monitor. So that's why we isolated these departments, because at least they are much easier accessible and to monitor the expenditure. In this table, you will also see the green and the yellow line. Again, we've added the special appropriations, the 1.2 billion and the 2.8 billion. Next slide. So, members, we've spent some time on trying to get a better understanding of the main cost drivers and the composition of expenditure within departmental budgets. So the question is how we use the departmental information and other structural analysis to improve the composition of budgets to be more efficient and effective. This slide also shows other possible inefficiencies that needs to be addressed by evaluations. Firstly, in terms of a macroeconomic structure, we found that there are also other departments within votes. For example, in vote 11, in public service and administration, there's also a department, Center for Public Service Innovation. So this department has got 30 personnel. Their budget is 42.6 million, of which administration costs is 21.5 million, which also leads to the conversation to the proportions of spending on Program 1 administration in all votes. So we've done the calculations, and it shows that the proportion that departments spend on administration is between 0.7% and 51.9% of their total allocation per vote. But when we exclude the transfers, the proportions change to between 29.8% and 100%. Another inefficiency is the duplication of functions within departments and between departments. We've seen it in our analysis of conditional grants, the conditional grant framework. And there are also possible duplications, for example, in the government communications and information services versus the public service administration, which also have an e-government service and information management unit, and also versus public service commission. I don't say these are examples that we will find duplications, but it's just an example. Next slide. So, members, just to illustrate what we've been saying about that cost of administration. So you can just look at Vote 7, National School of Government. National School of Government spent 51.9% of their total expenditure on Program 1 administration. And if we deduct the transfers, then the National School of Government actually spent 100% of their budget just on administration. If you look at about 33 human settlements, they spend 1.5% on administration, but if we deduct the transfers, they actually spend 52.7% of the appropriation on administration cost, specifically Program 1. The same with science and innovation. They spend 3.7%, but after taking away the transfers, they actually spend 57.6% of the budget on Program 1. Next slide. So members, this is just a summary of the special appropriations. We've illustrated the special appropriations throughout the presentation. It's the special appropriation for health, which is 1.25 billion, and a proportion of this spending will go for research. I think 1.1 is going towards vaccines, and the other 500 is going towards research projects. And then the appropriations of additional amounts to social development, it's 2.8 billion for the social relief of distress grant. And then the other adjustment to the appropriations to public enterprises is just a reprioritization of 2.7 billion. It's been reprioritized from SAA to the technical company. 1.7 billion, Mango is getting 809 million, and the Airship company is getting 218 million rand. Next slide. So members, this is just a list of conditional grants linked to programs that have been revised so that the funds can be spent on COVID-19 related items. We don't have to go through them because it's not that they received additional funds, it's just that the framework has been adjusted so that they can, it allows for expenditure on COVID-19 related expenditure. So I will hand over to Dr. Mohammed. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Lydia. Good morning, Honourable Chair. Slide, Director. This slide shows real per capita spending, and what it does is it looks at the expenditure over the median expenditure framework, taking into account changes in inflation and prices, and making prices comparable over the years from an economic perspective. And we also then divided by population, doing estimated population forecasts and estimated population growth. Dr. Madise from National Treasury, I think, did a really good job yesterday explaining the consequences of the across-the-board cuts. So I won't have to go into this into more detail, but it does give a sense in terms of looking at a person in real terms. So basically the spending of what you can get for 1 rand of money over the years, that changes. And we see that if you look at, especially using 2020 as a 21 as a year, most of real per capita spending declines, but in areas like higher education, police, and I'll show you on the next slide, transport, health, we actually see lower real per capita spending than we had before COVID from in 2019-20. And I think these, I won't go into more detail, because the consequences in terms of things like policing was explained yesterday by National Treasury, that the ratios change, and the ratios seem to change quite drastically from, in that we also saw in the budget review how class sizes are going to increase, pupils per teacher in basic education going to increase, and we're also looking at figuring out how to provide in this first money over the next 3 years, and those constraints caused by that. Next slide, please. So yes, this slide shows health, transport, even in things like water and sanitation, we don't see real per capita spending increasing, and we see actually compared to what we had in 2017-18 and 2018-19, in the real spending per person actually comes down quite a lot, and even taking into account the lessons of COVID and the need for households to have access to clean water, able to keep their hands clean, and proper sanitation for general health purposes. And next slide, please. Now, we titled this slide Fiscal Risk, Reputational Risk and Credibility, because we actually feel that there are problems related to how setting certain targets and pushing for fiscal consolidation as a way to achieve those targets could be a problem that could actually affect credibility and reputational risk. And as we've been saying over the last few years, and particularly during 2020 with COVID, is that continued fiscal consolidation will likely continue the multi-year trend of repeatedly missing debt reduction targets. What we're seeing developing is a cycle, and it's happened over quite a few years now, leading towards a decade, where inadequate government expenditure into an economy affected by a crisis or recession or poor performance, in South Africa's case, very high levels of unemployment. We actually sit in a situation where government expenditure into the economy is really important, and if government's not spending enough money in the economy as a consumer and as an investor, that is going to constrain GDP growth. And growth is required to reduce debt to GDP levels, and fiscal consolidation has constrained economic activity and growth. So we're actually seeing fiscal consolidation as a really important contributor to poor GDP growth, and also then to higher debt to GDP and interest payments to GDP levels, and over time leading to higher debt repayment to GDP level. And with this, the kind of credibility risk related to not achieving the goals set out also creates problems in debt markets, on markets, etc. The next risk we talk about is prematurely discontinuing COVID-19 relief to households and small businesses, which could negatively impact long-term growth and government revenue. The reductions to real expenditure in key budget areas will probably not achieve fiscal consolidation, but may negatively impact future revenue collection by negatively affecting aggregate demand and GDP growth. a new wave of COVID-19 could show that there's large inadequate budgeting for COVID-19 relief in 2021 budget. The credibility of government's medium-term expenditure framework and budgetary goals were in question because government would be forced to compromise on reducing the cost of expenditure linked to relation on the wage agreements, which negatively affect labor relations, and determination to reduce the cost of expenditure could negatively affect morale and productivity of the public sector and hamper initiatives to reduce wasteful expenditure and corruption. So the fallout could be beyond just not achieving fiscal goals, but overall productivity levels. Thanks for changing the slide. In terms of the fiscal risk, we put up government's guarantee exposures. I won't go into that in detail. I think these are now fairly well known in terms of numbers. We see it coming, reducing slightly from 2021 to 2022-23, but the poor financial management of local governments and government entities may require more expenditure to maintain local government and to meet government's contingent liabilities. There's also a concern that state-owned companies and government entities with guarantee debt may continue to have governance problems, poor management that negatively affects poor performance. Fiscal consolidation and poor economic performance linked to the pandemic could continue to negatively impact revenues of state-owned companies and their financial positions. Further declines in credit ratings could negatively affect national government finances directly and also guarantee the guarantee, and also the guaranteed debt of government entities and state-owned companies. Sorry, I just want to apologize. There's some work going on outside my house, road work or construction work, and so you probably a jackhammer or something in the background. I apologize for the noise. Thanks for getting the slide. So in 2019-20, the financial management in state-owned enterprises is clearly a continued risk to the fiscal position. SOEs are in serious financial difficulty. State-owned entities are in serious financial difficulty. They did not submit financial statements for auditing, including South African Airways and LMT products, which are under business rescue. SA Express is under provisional liquidation. SOEs disclosing financial statements showing future uncertainty includes Petroleum, Oil and Gas Corporation, SABC, Benel, and three subsidiaries, the Land and Agriculture Bank of South Africa, Pelkin, South African Nuclear Energy Corporation, and Eskom. Next slide, please. This table shows over time, so going back to 2008-09 through to 2022-23, the recapitalizations and bailouts of state-owned companies, look at Eskom, South African Airways, NAL, South African Express, EC Land Bank. And we see that the 2021 appropriation bill seeks to appropriate $31.7 billion to settle Eskom's government guaranteed debt, $4.3 billion to settle SAE's government guaranteed debt. We say that this fiscal support to SOEs must be considered in the context of previous and ongoing support over $300 billion since 2008. Next slide, please. Then the last section I'm going to deal with is looking at global risks and seeing that these are a problem and also not allocating enough within the medium-term expenditure framework and also the appropriations for this year could be a problem to South Africa. We list the global risks that affect South Africa's economy and budget as increasing climate change events, such as droughts, flooding, and fires, the possibility of more pandemics and other health crises, private and public debt accumulation, and risk of financial crisis and contagion. Here we're not talking about South Africa, but globally, and we've seen with COVID, the focus has shifted to the increases in public debt accumulation and worsening debt to GDP levels across the world. But we shouldn't take our eye off what's happening to private debt, corporate debt, and also what's happening in financial markets and kind of exuberance, one should call it, profligacy at like global financial markets on the private side. And that also happened in South Africa, it also be affecting the South African economy, either directly or through contagion. We see that in countries like the US, but also in other developed countries, that there's sort of signs of improvement, especially since last year, because of very large stimulus programs. But there is, I think, a very real concern looking forward of poor performance of key economies, the global economy. So basically the trend that happened before COVID of declining global GDP growth, poor performance in major countries continued. And in some of the larger developing countries, we're not seeing as rapid an improvement, and not only the largest, also smaller countries. Also, the recovery processes in some of the developing countries may take much longer than in developed countries where the rollout of the vaccine is faster. We are seeing high and rising levels of unemployment, inequality, and instability, even before COVID, and with COVID, fairly drastically. And our quarterly economic bulletins last year, we've actually mentioned the numbers for rising global and across the world unemployment rates, that increase inequality and instability, and basically also poverty levels globally, and affected the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals. And with all these things, particularly increasing inequality, we're seeing increasing political instability, even in developed countries, and the possibilities of more conflict internally, but also war across border countries. Any of the above risks could impact on global and domestic economic performance and negatively affect the fiscal position. Government may have to increase expenditure and lower revenues. The first bullet point there is basically talking about the incidences, and like COVID, you know, if we do have a pandemic, or if we do have, like we saw in Cape Town recently, a large fire in the mountain that destroys property and things. So climate change events and health crises could require large expenditure layouts and severely curtail revenue of government. Then the second point deals with mitigation related to those risks. Climate change analysis require increased public sector expenditure and investment to mitigate the potential impacts. Higher global debt levels and risk of financial crisis can constrain debt markets and push up interest rates while lowering investment levels, growth, and revenue. The rebound of the global economy after the pandemic may be short-lived. And so we may see that global economic factors not supporting a fast recovery in the South African economy as well, and that affecting revenue in South Africa as well. Growing unemployment and inequality combined with climate and health risks lead to heightened risk of political instability, conflict, and migration. Next slide.
Thank you so much. I think I'll carry on from here. Thank you so much, colleagues. Honourable members, I think at the beginning I meant to also just give you the heads up that the Finance Committee has invited us to brief them about the progress of the implementation of the Economic Recovery and Construction Plan. So we will, sometime next week, we'll be happy to share with the committee some of the information that we found in terms of how far we are, in terms of how far it's governed, in terms of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. Since the budget was presented, Chair, on our members, HGSA has released the 2020 PFMA audit outcomes. It has noted that ITOC should highlight some of the key issues in governance issues that the committee should take into account as well as part of oversight and process. I noted that sustainable solutions required to prevent accountability failures are still lacking in many governments and state departments, according from last year. As I said at the beginning, that it will obviously affect the government expenditure of governments in the next year. I think some of the adjustments probably take place in October. Um, and also emphasize the importance of oversight, specifically on the need for oversight on state-owned entities, on those, particularly those who are poor, health, financial health, and some of the key service delivery areas like education and health, need for closer oversight in those areas. The financial management discipline needed for to protect public money and ensure some transparency are still needed. Also need to prevent leakages and money that has been lost must be prioritized to all accounting. But I think in a way, when we draft the site models or plans for the year, that we recommend that should be taken into account in that regard. And highlighting specifically, the AG noted that there were signs of improvement in some of the areas, but I think the financial health generally continued to be alarming in many entities, many government departments, both from the national and provincial government level, with some of the entities remain insolvent and an increase of fruitless wasteful expenditure over the past year compared to the current year that was put. So we thought we should highlight this as well as some of the areas that when you look at the recommendations from the proposed appropriations, this would be taken into account as whether will the amounts allocated be used fully. Lastly, to conclude, what we're saying is that the fiscal strategy in 2021 budget is to contain non-interest expenditure goals and to adjust composition of expenditure, taking into account the support of household income households, low-income households, of course, increasing funding on healthcare due to the pandemic, and also as the treasurer mentioned that the continued support for capital infrastructure and also trying to get the recovery. But I think what we're saying is that notwithstanding the negative impact of the COVID on society, but it was our faith to really show how the vulnerable society and economy protect, even if the commitments are made in those three pillars up there. But it's not clear how that be implemented without sacrificing some of the economic development indicators that achieve over the years, and also stifling the economic growth in the process. The presentation demonstrated that the main adjustments that are required to the main budget non-interest expenditure since 2020, which includes those which has been included, and also adjustments are meant to provide for additional funding where it's needed immediately, like healthcare, and also provide to make adjustments as provided in the budget, previous budget. As part of the strategy to adjust the composition of spending, the presentation further provided a summary of composition of appropriations being proposed, showing how what's the medium term. The summary should give an indication where adjustments could be made to the composition of spending. Summary does not include all the programs, of course, we just said we highlight some of the few of them. We'll also look at the committee with the real second capital expenditure, which is a bit of a risk, but it's based on that we've seen decline of the years, zero of the years there's been decline in the capital expenditure, and also that's noted by government as well, in terms of where are the the competing interest where, but clearly that has affected the spending per household. Next in Israel, it's key budget areas are unlikely to achieve fiscal expenditure. I think the main point there is saying we've been in this path for a long time, but we have not realized the objective itself, keep moving the goalposts, whereas this is an indication that the demand in the economy is actually sacrificing the process. Other fiscal assistance, such as the reduction in wage bill, public finance subsidies, and management, as well as the global economic movements, are likely to delay the resolution of fiscal objectives, as we say there. And lastly, we do emphasize that in consideration of the proposals, a lot of the events is February, and that should be taken into account in terms of how it affects the current proposals in this regard. Chairperson and other members, thank you so much for the opportunity. I think that's where we'll stop and take the comments. Just additional slides there. Thank you so much. much.
Thank you, Dr. Janchis, Dr. Olani, Dr. Mohammed, and the team that is supporting you. Our members, we've come to the end of the of the presentation by PBO. Then I will get hands of the people who would like to engage with the presentation. So there are not many of us. Just shout out your name. Let's hear. Let's go, honourable members.
Matafa.
Honourable Matafa.
Kaiso.
Honourable Kaiso.
Mlenzana.
Honourable Mlenzana. Any other member? Thank you. Honourable Matafa. Let's work on 5 minutes and see how far we go.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, mine will be very brief. I don't think that I will reach 5 minutes. Let me start by first to thank the presentation, Dr. Janjis and the team. The presentation does really help in us engaging on these issues. Chair, I just need to raise a very high level questions with relation to the current fiscal development. And the high level questions are aligned with the commitments that were made by the president. And I'm more interested to hear if whether PBO did pick up some of this particular effort coming forth from the department in order to help the president and the country achieve what the president has set us to do. But before I continue, Chair, let me also apologize for the background noise. There's a construction next door, just like the prof was presenting there. The first point, Chair, one of the priorities of the president was the youth employment initiative, which would have required 1% of the country's budget to be set aside. And how that would have been set aside was going to be through the slicing of the budget. Now, how I understand it, it would have meant that some money, which will equal to 1%, would have been redirected from various departments to specifically target youth initiatives in terms of addressing the scourge of youth unemployment in the country. I'm interested to find out if whether PBO is picking up any of these particular efforts from departments to ensure that this becomes a success. Now, I'm raising this, Chair, because in the President's announcement and subsequent discussions, there were specific initiatives like the youth prototypes in provinces, which would have required funding. Now, whenever there are budget cuts, such initiatives, as they are new, normally suffer. I'm interested to find out if whether is this commitment by the President protected. The second one, Chair, it's I think what the country is grappling with on a daily basis, the commitment to fight gender-based violence and crime in general. Now, yesterday when the National Treasury was presenting to us, there was an issue of key personnel recruitment or failing to fill vacancies in almost all departments due to the budget adjustment. Now, having said that, I'm interested to find out if whether would PBO have identified if whether key personnel required to fight GBV and crime in general, particularly in the space of justice and SAPS, if whether would they be affected as well? Because what we have realized is that in certain instances, as a country, we lack capacity to deal with these particular challenges. And some of the capacity would require human as well as systems implementation. And unfortunately, this comes with a certain amount of cost. I just want to find out if whether is this a battle that you are likely to win, or is the focus still on this one? And unfortunately, in most cases, Chair, whatever that you do in the country, you must translate what you say or commit to in how you spend your money. The expenditure must follow the strategy. On the issue of SOEs, I agree with the Auditor General that there is a much need to ensure that there's accountability in that particular space. Now, again, the President made a commitment of trying to stimulate economic growth, and we have identified the transport network as one of the key drivers of economic growth. Now, I'm interested to find out if whether is there an observation also that there is a commitment to address the issue of the ailing transport system. Firstly, the maintenance that is required due to wear and tear, but secondly, especially as it pertains to the train service, during the lockdown, there has been a lot of vandalism that was experienced in the rail network of the country, particularly on the passenger lines. Is there an effort from the transport department and government, as well as the public enterprise, to ensure that these particular challenges are addressed? Because we are sitting with a situation where most passengers have now resorted to using taxis, which is expensive and impacts on their monthly expenditure, and it obviously eats into their revenue that they bring into the house. I know of a neighbor in Soshanguve, where I come from, who just decided that, no, I'm leaving this job because I can't have a situation where 75% of my money goes into taxis and I come back with only 25%. So I rather hustle within the community where I live in instead of going to town. So he's selling on the street corner, somebody who had a meaningful employment. So that for me is a matter that is close to my heart. The last one, Chair, is on the issue of the sovereign debt and how it correlates with the GDP. I just want to find out if whether the PBO has inquired how far are we, or how far is the debt, the gap between debt and GDP, and if whether the current fiscal situation will exacerbate the situation that we are likely to have an increased debt, particularly as it comes to the service cost for the debt concerned. For now, Chair, I will pause there. Those are the issues that I just wanted to bring to the discussion. Thank you for the opportunity to engage, Chairperson.
Thank you, Robert Machapa. Robert Tyson.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to ask a few things here. Firstly, let me thank and welcome the presentation made by PBO. So I just want to get into the space where Nelly was presenting on the areas of performance and the allocations there and the expenditure. I've seen or I've noticed that when we were dealing with the let me start with the cooperative governance, that the COE there was a 0.3%. I just want to check whether, is it not the situation that you find in the police and the office of the Chief Justice, because there as COEs was around the police 78% and the Office of Chief Justice at 74%. Is it not a similar trend that you probably think there might be something wrong there that you need to look or to come up with a better explanation to understand or to comprehend that? Because you believe that or you suspect that there might be other figures which have been perhaps been conflated with the COEs rather than goods and services. So I just want to check that, because a 0.3% on compensation of employees and that 4.6% on the government services, it doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of, you know, balancing all those figures. Now, coming to public service and administration, I think the department has to deal with this, Honorable Chair, the duplication of functions. Because the sooner you deal with the duplication of functions, maybe the better the department would at least be presentable in terms of, you know, your functions, your organogram, etc. So I think there has to be a recommendation that the public service and administration, when we meet with them, they have to look at this duplication of functions. So that it should be an element that is going to assist moving forward. Now, I didn't hear anything around the issue of how does the PPO see the issue of, you know, dealing with corruption in general being raised at this level, because I think it's one of the risks. I don't see it being included in the risk. So it should have been one of the risks that it's been included there, because you can imagine, for instance, if we have an entity such as Eskom where we have over 100 cases of criminal cases being opened there, what risk is the entity facing there? So I'm just saying, raising a principle that the issue of corruption should have also reflected as one risk as we're dealing with these issues moving forward, but I didn't get the PPO raising anything around it. Now, I agree with the issues that my colleague has raised with regard to economic recovery plan, you know, as to how far is progress, although I understand that the PBO is going to raise with us in few times, in few days to come, as to how far have we have now the programs have aligned and the output thereof since the announcement by the state president. And yes, now on issue of I didn't hear once more on the issue, because you raised the issue of household a decline in terms of transfers given those years that you've highlighted in the slide. But I also want to check the PBO's understanding of the implementation of the basic income grant. That, don't you think that maybe this is recommendable to be implemented to intervene in that specific area, although it is a lot of, you know, discussion taking place, but don't you think that is about time? Because looking at the what you say in terms of the COVID-19 new wave and doing away of the COVID-19 relief budget that people were getting, it's going to exacerbate the situation that you referred to earlier in that slide, which deals with household income. So I think it is important that we this measure of, you know, COVID-19 relief budget has to be reviewed in order to match with the current developments in as far as a threat to a third wave of COVID-19 and given the situation that is developing around COVID-19 around the world. I think it has to be relooked such that now at least our people are able to, you know, to sustain and survive the difficulties of the economy during this period. So those are my few inputs that I wanted to make around Chairperson, the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Taiso. Let me also join the other members thanking PBO for their input. It definitely helped us. Honorable Matafa and Dr. Mohammed, it's good when there is noise behind you of construction, because it means the economy is picking up. So I think we should celebrate that.
Hey, Chairperson, when they buy.
Oh, there's construction. Oh, sorry, Honorable Lebana, please come in. Sorry.
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. In fact, mine is also one but generic question. In fact, two questions but generic. Let me start by joining colleagues in welcoming the presentation by PBO. It's a mouthful and it's sharpening our tools of analysis. Chairperson, let me start by, yes, I understand that the judges were saying in a few days to come, they would be coming to us to talk to us on the roadmap towards the economic recovery plan and on. I would then shelve my questions regarding that. I will not talk to it. But then, Chairperson, if Dr. Johnson Tim could reflect to us their analysis of these various budget cuts in terms of the negative impact that they pose, generally, and specifically to those entities and departments which we have lifted through SONA in the presidential inductions, like your education, like your health. Do we see now, or do we see the realization of the implementation of the president's injunction happen if there is going to be this continuous cuts? Also, Chair, linked to this question, or a new one, I'm not sure. I understand the changes through some views around the risks. But now, mine, I'm not sure whether it would be falling there under risk of what Chairperson would be guided. But then, where do we locate the consequent management against implementing agent or department which either delay or do not implement infrastructure projects? I'm not sure, Chairperson, whether I would locate this into impact assessment. What we've been saying as to where at what stage are we actually checking or following up as to whether the budget does have an impact or not? It's just those two, Chairperson, because my interest really would be realizing that this budget be the parliament's path and tool towards economic recovery, basically. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lenzana. If anybody else would like to come in, our members, before I do.
Yes, Chair. Just one question that I've forgotten to raise. I just want to get the view of the PBO around this issue. You know, when the budget growth, or I mean the growth on the economy and the cuts which were being announced, especially around the salaries, wages, and the projections which Treasury had made, do you think that now that there is this loud noise around outside the issue of, you know, salary freezes, do you think that is that is those projections still, you know, applicable given that amount of noise that you pick up outside around the salary wages freeze? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kaiso.
Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Matata.
Thank you, Chair. In one of the slides, I think it's the one that speaks to SOEs, it states that SA Express is under provisional liquidation. I'm interested to find out what is the current situation, because I saw contradicting statements in the media. One statement was saying that as we speak, SA Express assets are being sold in batches. And the other one was stating that SA Express is still under business rescue. I'm just interested to find out if whether PBO knows the actual state of SA Express and where is the entity as far as its life is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Matapa. Thank you, PBO leadership again. The Presidential Youth Employment Initiative of 11 billion rand is still not allocated. So from your point of view, where do you think it should go to with a bigger and better multiply effect and a high propensity to create jobs? If you were to find yourself in a position where you were to advise the president, where do you think that the higher propensity to create jobs would be found if you were to allocate to this? Secondly, the question of the credit guarantee scheme, it has been extended according to the communique which was released by National Treasury. But the banks had only dispersed about 18 billion rand of what we thought was going to be a stimulus of 200 billion rand at the beginning. So that's less than 10%. And if you were to critique the credit guarantee scheme, what would you say? Because for sure, what was intended to be achieved with it has definitely not been achieved. If you could only disperse, or the banks could only disperse about less than 10% of the total credit guarantee scheme. If you were to critique, what would you say? And perhaps in future, how do you deal with this type of an intervention, both by the National Treasury and the South African Reserve Bank? Dr. Mohammed, when you spoke about the risks that we should look at, we talk about that we should also be looking at the developments around the debt of private sector internationally for obvious reasons. But if you don't mind, and if you do have information, what is happening with the local, what is the position of the local private debt? I think we've had a number of people when they critique the budget. They critique the budget by talking about the extended consolidation period and the cuts in all the votes that have been cut, right? But now the question is, and we know the reason is that the receiver is under collecting because of the economic conditions that we find ourselves in. But I would like you to just say, what are the alternatives of money? Because definitely we need to spend money in the area that we're spending money at. For instance, we can't do anything. We need to intervene as far as health is concerned.
but at the same time we are cutting. What are the other sources of funds? Remember that you also talk about the debt which is unsustainable, which is ballooning. So if you were to advise this committee, what would you say? I would like to refer you to slide 14, where you talk about transfers and administration. I think it's Dr. Oland. Can you just repeat it, Grace? What is the point that you are trying to emphasize there? What are you drawing our attention to? Then on slide 13, you were talking about departments where there's a potential of efficiency gain. If you don't mind, please just share with us which are those departments and what do you think should be done with them. Then you spoke about the military veterans, and I think what you said is that a lot of money is due to contractors. Exactly what's happening, I think the bigger percentage goes to the contractors, if my memory serves me well. What do you think are the type of questions that we must ask the minister when it comes to this? I'm trying to find out what do contractors do with the military veterans, because military veterans are people who are no longer with the force. So what's happening with the contractors? I don't know whether you do have any information on that. Then you spoke about the green economy intervention, and what's curious is that is the responsibility that you seem to be giving to the Environment, Fisheries and Forest Department. Don't you think that you are limiting the intervention? Because I think the call of government generally is for every department to try and get and go green. But by and large, I think the Department of Public Enterprises and DMR and the departments, again, which should be in the forefront of this, apart from the environment, forest and fisheries. I'm saying public enterprises, for instance, you know, Eskom, it's one of the companies, and I'm sure many other companies falling under public enterprises and energy. Yeah, I think we have given you a mouthful, Dr. Chanchis and your team. Please, can you respond? Dr. Chanchis, are you not muted? Dr. Oland, Dr. Mohammed, whoever can come in.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can start with some of the responses. The first matter was raised by Honourable Matafa in terms of the youth employment. So this is also one of the things that we try to show throughout this presentation. So the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, they transfer, I just want to just make sure that I'm there. That department transfers 73.7% of their budget to the Commission of Gender Equality and the National Youth Development Agency. So one of the points that I try to emphasize is that it is much easier to monitor the outputs and the actions and the performance of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. But it's not easy to monitor the outputs of the entities to which they transfer. Because if you go to the, we have access to the quarterly performance reports, the database, since the presentation to this committee by DPME. We asked them for access, so we do have access. So we have access to the information of the Department of Women, but that department will not reflect in their quarterly performance report the outputs of the entities. And the entities are not on the database. So the whole system of performance reporting are getting so complex and difficult for Parliament in specific to get that information and really to monitor. So if we need to get that information and make sure that we monitor if the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability are monitoring the entities, we will have to call on that department to come and present to our committee. So that is with regards to the gender-based violence as well as with the youth employment. Also in terms of gender-based violence, there are many indicators that we can follow in the police service as well as in justice, because there is a duplication of reporting in both those departments on the files, on the cases, on the outcome of the cases. So there are a lot of statistics that one can follow within those departments. We haven't done the analysis. We can, or the other alternative is basically to ask DPME to come and report on the QPRs, and it's the performance on the APPs, which is their responsibility. Then, in terms of members were interested in the proportions that we spend on corporate governance. Honourable Kahisu, the Department of Corporate Governance, it indicates that they spend 0.3% of their budget on COE, and in line with that, they spend 4.6% of their budget on goods and services. But one must remember or realize that that department transfers 95.1% of their budget to local government in the form of a local government equitable share as well as the conditional grants to local government. In the other table where we calculated the deduct the transfer to local government, you will get a total different picture in terms of the proportions that the department spend on COE. You also were interested in police. In terms of the proportions in police, they spend 78.1% on personnel and 16.9% on goods and services. So if you look at the entire analysis of all departments, it's almost like a reverse trend in police. So all the departments, there's a good relationship between spending on COE and on goods and services. And throughout, it's the goods and services proportion that department spend is between 20 and 30%. But in police, you just get a total different picture. They spend 78% on COE and only 16.9% of their budget. So it's almost like you get an indication of there's something different in the police services. So is it because it's a total different way of doing business, or are there something underlying? We haven't done an analysis, but the Treasury actually indicated yesterday that they are doing reviews and evaluations on all departments. So those evaluations will also come out in those analysis or reviews that they are doing. But also in terms of police, what we can see in terms of the information that we have in the E&E, the police actually started already with a vacancy rate of 2,000 positions. So that might also be one of the reasons why the Treasury reduced their budget by 11 billion, the COE budget. So there are a lot of underlying things within the detail. And as I also mentioned, I tried within the information that we have in the E&E, we don't have more information what the National Treasury has, is that we can also look into the database if you really want a budget analysis on the police services to get a better picture. But I also tried to see what they spend their funds on, and it's basically on the vehicles that they use. That is the main contributor to the goods and services budget. But I couldn't find any item, perhaps it's just hidden in the database or in the E&E, on what they spend on uniforms, because most of our policemen are in uniform. So, I mean, it might be that the uniform budget is somewhere hidden within COE. We don't know. We need further analysis on the police force. You also mentioned justice. Justice spent 56.8% on the compensation, but the goods and services are still in line with the general expenditure of between 20 and 30% on goods and services. But this also makes sense that justice spend a higher proportion on COE because it's driven by COE. So yeah, that was the question in terms of the balancing of the composition of budgets and how this analysis actually indicated where we must look in further and do further analysis or evaluations in terms of the compositions. Growth Public Service Administration, that was just a comment. We didn't look at the corruption as a risk. And then in terms of the analysis of the budget cuts and the negative impact to those departments, members, you will not see the negative effect in the budget numbers. You will only be able to see the negative effect in the performance information. And again, that we will have to call on the Department of DPME to come in, because in our previous engagements with them, they indicated that they will do the analysis of all the APPs that were submitted of departments. So then they will be able to indicate whether there were reduction in the targets in relation to the outputs. And we haven't done, if the committee wants the PBO to do it, it will take some time because we are only 5 people in the PBO that can do analysis at the moment. And we will only be able to do a selection that you indicate to us of departments if we have to do analysis on APPs. And then Honourable Buthelezi, you spoke about the 11 billion that was not appropriated. Where should we allocate the money? We are also intended, the PBO are intended to also look at the current performance of the previous allocation of funds for the employment initiative of the presidency. But one must also realize at this stage they were only allocated for short-term positions. This 11 billion is there, but it's just a once-off allocation. It does not have a carry-through effect. So one cannot allocate these funds for continuous or positions or permanent positions. It's just a once-off allocation, such as allocations or additional allocations for short-term positions. and then the need to spend other sources. Honorable Boutless, you also asked about in terms of slide 13 and 14. And it's almost this, it links to the question that was asked by Honorable Matalfa in terms of the proportions that we spend. And where can we get efficiency? Those departments that actually, that we can find the, it's different from the proportions that they spend are different from the general proportions that the departments spend. Those are the indications that we get that one must look further into those departments, such as Stats South Africa. In general, most departments spend less on goods and services than on COE in terms of the proportions that they spend. But in Stats South Africa, they spend more on goods and services than on COE. So it is an indication that one should actually look into the way they do business or on what they spend in terms of the goods and services. The same with the military veterans. The proportion that they spend on COE is 19.4, but then the goods and services are quite high. And already, that is just one item that I've identified, is it might be because they spend additional funds on contractors instead of COE. So that might be the reason why the COE proportion is less than the goods and services. But the E&E also does not provide an entire range of items that one can identify, but that is also an indication of further investigation on what the military veterans actually spend their money on. I also looked at the transfers, and most of the transfers that they do is to households. And also to mention is that the military veterans spend a lot of funding on training. So it might be that the contractors are for training programs, but they also provide a lot of bursaries to military veterans and their families, which are then locked up in the transfer budget. So there's a lot of detail within the departments that one can do an analysis on. And then environmental and forestry, they also spend a bigger proportion on goods and services, and that is basically also on contractors. But that might also be, it might be the norm in terms of how they do their business, because environmental affairs has got a lot of projects in terms of the green economy, in terms of alien vegetation, which they might use also contractors or to do the work for them on behalf of them. But it's captured in goods and services and not in transfers. So the composition of that budget is also different from the general proportions that other, so one can also look more into the detail and how they do their business, or even the department can come and explain why the composition is like that. Honorable Buthelezi, we are also, as soon as we finish with this presentation, we're starting our presentation and analysis on the economic recovery and the recovery plan, and that will definitely include more information on the green economy and all the departments that are responsible for the green economy. Yes, Siraj, if you want to continue on the economic section.
Thank you.
hear you now. What's happening?
Oh, sorry. I've been getting messages that my connection is unstable.
Why don't you switch off your video and let's see how.
Okay, I'll turn off my video. Thank you. Is that better, Honorable Chair?
Yes, it is much better.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the main issue that's come, one of the issues that's been raised in all the questions has been related to the expenditure cuts. And in your last question, Honorable Chair, you also raised the issue of fiscal sustainability and the of and how it is.
Your presentation was coming out very clear. Now we are really struggling to hear you. What's happening?
I think my internet is unstable. I'm really sorry about that.
That's the way you are now.
Okay. I haven't been moving, but it seems to go in and out, so I really apologize for that. It seems to happen also at the worst moment. Just let me know when you can't hear me, and then I'll stop and I'll see if I can fix things. As I said when I was presenting, I thought that National Treasury yesterday in their presentation did a really good overview and actually went into some detail of where the cuts would happen. And as you said, they would be across the board cuts, but it showed that they would have fairly significant impacts at the community level. And the issue of crime and gender-based violence came up, and we saw that the cuts to the police will reduce the ratios of police per 1,000 people in the country beyond sort of the kind of benchmark that government has been setting itself. We also see, like I said earlier, basic education, pupil class sizes and pupil teacher ratios are going to. And I think a lot of that we need to take put in the context of what the situation was before COVID and the struggles we've been having in education, with crime, with gender-based violence, etc. And as problems of unemployment and poverty increase, I think globally we've seen that there's a correlation between crime and gender-based violence and also other things that erode the social fabric related to growing increasing poverty and unemployment. So the impacts of I think those cuts on society and sort of not only the multiplied impacts or the negative multiply impact on the budget on the GDP and what that means for revenue, but the overall impacts, but also in terms of thinking about economies as path dependent, where what you did yesterday and what you're doing today is going to affect you in the future, and not necessarily only in the short term, but also in the medium and long term. And I think that's why we're seeing in many developed countries an effort to put in place very large stimulus programs. Now in South Africa, I recently saw an article which I need to do more research on to see how credible it is, but they said in South Africa and also in other developing countries, on average in South Africa it was about 66%, but on average more than 60% of the relief and stimulus packages related to COVID went to big business sort of two-thirds or less went to poorer households and small businesses. And so we're seeing that even those kind of efforts have been more supportive of wealthier people and big business than of the poorer people and haven't been adequate to deal with the problems of increasing unemployment and poverty and the social impact of those. And in South Africa, the across-the-board cuts that we're seeing over the medium-term framework, I think, are going to exacerbate those problems. But that brings us to the question then, you know, fiscal sustainability. Can government spend more? We're not going to raise money. And I think here we've seen, am I still audible, Honorable Chair?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good. Thank you. Thank you. Everything went very quiet. So I was watching. Thank you for it. In macroeconomics, you know, there is no clear proof or evidence that shows, you know, that you can have only a certain level of debt to GDP. In South Africa, and the way that National Treasury is presented it, that we're going to run into a cash flow problem because our debt repayments to GDP are growing. As our debt grows, and also we're seeing that causing problems with things like credit ratings. Now, the response in developed countries and what we've seen during COVID, including in, I think, almost 20 developing countries, is greater use of central bank direct funding of government, often called quantitative easing. And this sort of made me think about the credit guarantee and the fact that 200 billion of the 500 billion that we had set aside for relief had been form of a credit guarantee that has you know, not even come close to touching the kind of impact that we would have wanted to see support to the economy. And it raises the question that if government was willing to, you know, to guarantee that debt, and the Reserve Bank was willing to put that money into the private banking system to unlend, why could that money not have just been directly infused into government's budget and helping with sort of some framework? And I think that sort of is related very much to thinking about how governments have responded to the COVID crisis and try to stimulate the economy and what they can and can't do and what the role of central banks funding, even if it's just temporary in this kind of situation, can be. There are also other things I think that have been raised in public hearings and that, and I won't go into alternative sources of financing, but I think the big issue that I think I mentioned at least twice when I presented was that in this kind of situation where the economy is sort of struggling along, even if we are going to see some bounce back, that the amount of money that government spends and invests into the economy, whether it comes from borrowed money or whether it's from reallocating money from other places within government, whether it's on cost of employment or whether it's on investment in infrastructure, but at a macro level, that spending in the economy makes a huge difference to recovery and the possibilities for future growth. It has a huge, I think, social impact. So I'm not going to carry on with that point, but I think in terms of what is sustainable, you know, there are lots of big questions about that, and that answer is not clear from economic theory, but I think what we're seeing, especially in developed countries, but in many developing countries, also in countries like China, is that a big effort for government to directly stimulate the economy through spending and investing into the economy, not only in infrastructure, but also social expenditure, and helping with increased debt. And that we should be aware that a lot of our expenditure may have actually not benefited in South Africa. Issue of state-owned entities, corruption. I think we sort of food corruption under the broad label of management and government and the problems of the continued problems and format. And as you said, and Dr. Chief presented from the Auditor General, and so in thinking about total enterprises, I think a lot of effort needs to be put into jacking up management and also governance at board level. Related to infrastructure expenditure and the role of state-owned enterprises is also important there for the future. And one of the things we're hearing from government is that we don't have fiscal space to spend money, and so we need to be leveraging more private sector money. And for me, I'm not saying that this is the wrong approach, but we have to be really careful, I think, and in future oversight, think about what this means for maintenance of current state-owned assets, provision of water, electricity, etc. And then the second thing is how it will impact on contingent liabilities in the future, because a lot of PPP programs depend on government actually reducing risk, things like demand risk, where PPPs need some kind of support and guarantee to say, if there is a reduced demand in the economy because of recession, or maybe there isn't uptake for services they're providing, or people can't afford to pay the tariffs, then government steps in and actually closes that gap. Sort of reducing the risk with debt and helping mitigate that by sort of signing agreements at multilateral level or internationally. And so within a lot of these PPPs, the contingent liabilities will be off budget and not on government's books, but it could be a threat in the future. And so that's something. The income grant related, I think, the situation, the poverty that and unemployment that existed before COVID and has been exacerbated by the pandemic. The PBO hasn't done a research project on the basic income grant yet. We're actually developing a research agenda for the rest of the year at the moment, and I think what we have been focusing on in the past that will definitely feed into this kind of discussion is the situation of households and household debt, household employment and poverty, and the resilience or lack of resilience of households, particularly given the ending of the relief related to the COVID package. And so overall, I think we don't want to comment much on whether we should recommend a basic income grant, but I think there is a recognition that we do need to do something to support poor households and also people who are out of the current as a way to deal with the broader socioeconomic problems, but also in terms of the stimulus that can give to the economy in terms of and the possibility of increasing it. I've lost my train of maybe I'll have to remind me of questions we haven't covered.
Button was the last one.
Thank you.
Mr. Mazur?
Can you
come again? What?
Sorry. I'm going to end there. Sorry, I had another question I wanted to cover, but I've forgotten what it was. So I'm sorry about that. But if
if members want to ask questions that we forgot to cover in our response, maybe it will come back to me. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed. The chairperson has just cut off, so I'm just chairing this session to finish off. Honorable members, is there any matter that we have left out so that we can be able to step off from the discussion and responses from the PBO? And as far as I'm concerned, I think all hands were taken. And giving one round. The chair is back. I was checking whether are there any issues left out during the discussion that perhaps PBO needs to stamp out so that we can step off from the item.
Yes, Chair, just one follow-up question, if I may.
Yes, yes, may proceed.
I just, obviously, when you listen to the presentation, there are many issues which come, which relate to, well, all of them related to portfolio committees. But I wanted to just take one example of an anomaly between this COE and goods and services in police. And I think Dr. Olan was saying that there is definitely an anomaly there which we don't understand for now. There must be research on it. But I was just checking, how often do you make presentations to other portfolio committees? That's one. Or do you get invitations from other portfolio committees? Because I'm sure some of these things are very relevant to them so that they can follow up while you're on us, because we are not in a position to meet all the departments. I don't know whether Dr. Olan would like to respond to that.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. No, we do not, and we haven't received requests to present budget analysis to any of the portfolio committees as yet. And there's just one other remaining question that you also was interested in, is in terms of what's the point of showing the proportions that we spend on administration. This is basically all about how can we change the macro structure of government? Because we've got such a lot of small departments that basically just exist almost as a post office and just transferring money, but they still spend a lot of money on administration. So basically that's the main expenditure. And it's not just one or two, there are quite a few of them that might be introduced or merged as a program within bigger departments with the same vision or aim. So that's basically the point that we want to show in terms of the cost of administration. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I hope we've covered all the questions.
Sorry, Honourable Chair. I just remembered the question that I was going to cover but forgot, which it was, I don't think we have time for me to just respond to the question that you asked about the issues of private finance in South Africa and the risks that that could pose. Mm-hmm. If I can go ahead. So, What we've seen in the pandemic is that, you know, before COVID, we saw decreasing levels of household debt to disposable income, and that is actually the ability of governments to sort of households to pay down debt decreased during COVID as household income declined. And so we're seeing households moving back to the debt to disposable income levels of close to sort of around the time of the global financial crisis again. And what we're seeing, some of the South African financial institutions projecting is that that this trend is going to continue even
a few years into when COVID recovery happens, because people have been using their access to debt to make up for the loss of income, especially middle class income. And there's a sort of concern then of what that's going to mean for aggregate demand. And if interest rate levels in South Africa do increase, they were sort of brought down partly also because of the Reserve Bank wanting to support households and businesses during the pandemic. But if there's a concern with inflation, that may actually then also put a further pressure on households. And households are unlike government in the sense that they're very limited in the increase in debt they can take on. Governments are less limited than households in that sense. So that poses a risk to aggregate demand. From the financial side, we actually have seen, and this has been a global phenomenon, that returns in markets and sort of activity in equity markets has remained quite high. There's also been increases of debt instruments, like derivatives, what they call SPACs, and those things that come with the possibility of increasing systemic risks in the economy. And South Africa has been there. Now, one of the risks to South Africa in terms of investment is that as the returns in the financial markets remain relatively high, that capital gets allocated towards short-term financial activities and not towards investment and not necessarily to support government infrastructure drive, for instance. There also may be an increased allocation of capital generated in South Africa, maybe if there's a commodity super cycle looming, and we may see higher mineral prices for our exports. You know, some of that money may actually be drawn towards the developed countries that are showing a faster recovery than South Africa and into their markets rather than into South Africa. So that could actually be a constraint on investment and GDP growth as well. But also the threats to financial stability related to those things. The increased financial market activity and the possibilities of problems in financial markets, whether it's localized or whether it's global, I think remain. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Mohammed. Thank you, Honorable Kaiso. I was also getting an unstable connectivity. Honorable members, I'm not sure whether there's any other pending matter that you'd like to take with the TVO. Okay, in the absence of any follow-up, I think it may be prudent for people when they're not interacting with the finance committees that they also identify some of the committees and become proactive. We just a request to to brief the committee about matters affecting their portfolio. But what do you think, Dr. Neil and Dr. Mohammed?
So Neil, do you want to go first or should I?
No, you can.
Okay. I think the PBO is definitely open to request from committees, and I think don't want to speak for the director. I think we would be open to sort of being more proactive and reaching out, especially where we're doing research, like on the ERRP or specific areas that relate to their work. I think my one concern is that we, over the COVID period, we've lost two analysts, and we haven't replaced them yet. And so we are sitting with a smaller
amount of technical staff to do more research. So where our existing research, I think, it would be useful to other departments, and it doesn't entail much more new work and labor hours. I would definitely say that we would be open to that, and it's something I think we can discuss with the directors, sort of, in how we are approaching other committee chairs and being more proactive in presenting our work, the existing work. Thank you, Chair. The next lady wants to add anything.
Okay. Thank you, Siroj. Honourable Chairperson, because we are such a small institution or component, it will be difficult actually to reach out to a lot of portfolio committees, but also we also don't want to intrude into the space of the researchers because they are also doing budget analysis, although they are not doing budget analysis on the entire budget. But I think one option for us might be that we can also discuss in our board meetings and with the chairpersons of the board of the PBO is the possibility to present some of our work to the chair of chairs. I don't know how you feel about it, but that is one option in the interim with the capacity that we have. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. It was very nice to have such a good discussion with the committee this morning.
Thank you. Okay, let that be an ongoing discussion, and I'm sure let's take it up with the board of PBO, chaired by the chair of chairs. So where we can see, I'm just looking and. One is quite sensitive to the constraints again of the PPO would like you to chew more than you can bite. So resources allowing, time allowing, where we think we can add value, I think it's a good thing to do. It will be more about adding on what the researchers do. We do have researchers ourselves here, yeah, but we don't see PPO as an intrusion. We see them more as being complementary to what our researchers are doing. But that's fine, let that be, it's just because I was seeing the value that we are getting and thinking that our colleagues in other portfolio committees, time allowing, resources allowing, may also benefit. But that's fine. Thank you very much for the presentation. And I think we were able to do the number of things. The takes care of agenda item number 3. Darren, do you have any announcements?
No announcements, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you so much. Our next meeting is on?
Next week, Chairperson.
On Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, members. Thank you, thank you very much. It takes us to the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.